From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people.
10 years ago, I didn't believe in the internet, and yet I'm downloading a chili recipe as we speak.
Computers can do that?
To start, press any key. Where's the any key? I see ESC, Kataro, and Pigup.
There doesn't seem to be any key.
And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening. I am Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida. And welcome, everyone, to Tuesday Topics this evening. I want to thank our producer, Brian Charlson, for all his work in herding our guests together and stepping in and hosting on occasion. And, of course, I'd like to thank Steve Bauer, our recorder-editor, who turns this chaos into an effective and appropriate program. I'd like to remind everyone that if you have issues that you'd like to raise with us, please remember our email address, TuesdayTopics, TuesdayTopics, @acbradio.org. Remember also that we now do have an archive page on ACB Radio, so you can actually find some of our previous shows up there. And as time goes on, we hope to enlarge upon the number of those. All of the shows are only possible because of Mr. George Byes of Talking Communities, whose software makes it possible for us to manage to produce and present Tuesday Topics to you. Well, our guest this evening is kind of an interesting phenomenon. He's a pretty cool guy from Chicago, Illinois. But in addition, he is one of the few guests on Tuesday Topics who has actually done this program before, but unfortunately, for whatever reason, the recording of the program when he did it didn't survive. So now Ray is an old pro at this. He was fortunate not to have to deal with me. Brian Charlson was hosting Tuesday Topics that particular evening. Nevertheless, we thought that what Ray does and what Ray has to talk about was so interesting that we invited him to come back again to Tuesday Topics with us. And so it's with great pleasure that I welcome to Tuesday Topics again, Ray Campbell. Ray, why don't you begin by telling us a little about yourself and perhaps some of the things that you have done before your present job, but don't tell us about your present job yet, so that folks get an idea of who Ray Campbell is.
Sure, Paul, be glad to. Thank you, first of all, for I'm glad I was able to steal a few minutes away from my preparations for my remodeling project to do this and everything. Just a bit about me. My name is Ray Campbell, as Paul mentioned. I am totally blind, have been so all of my life. I am a member of ACB's Board of Directors. As many of you may know, I'm also president of the Illinois Council of the Blind. I am married to Karen Campbell. Some of you may know Karen. She is the program chair for the Sight and Sound Impaired Committee of ACB. Prior to what I do now, which we'll go in depth on, of course, I got graduated in 1986 from North Central Technical College in Wausau, Wisconsin, with an associate degree in data processing. I went to work for AT&T Bell Laboratories, which in 1996 spun off into Lucent Technologies. It's a major telecommunications company. It's now known as Alcatel-Lucent, for those who keep up with such things. What I did there, I basically was a software engineer. For 15 and a half years with that company, spent much of my time there doing database design and programming work. I also did some documentation management work, wrote test plans and test scripts, and also wrote some code for various applications within the telecommunications switching arena. In 2001, Lucent said, "We don't need you anymore," like they said to a lot of people. And they laid me off, and I was out of work for 9.5 months. After that, and then took quite a career change. I went to work for the our local Center for Independent Living here in suburban Chicago, and I served there for 3 years as visually impaired service coordinator. I had volunteered with the center quite a bit over the years, and as I was out of work at the time, came around to the realization that, hey, maybe it would be attractive to go to work there. The person that had the job before me was leaving, and so it was a good opportunity. And I did that work for 3 years. And, of course, that's very different than technology. I was doing things like information referral, a lot of advocacy work, which I love to do anyway, on such issues as transportation, employment issues, education, those kinds of things. As I went along, though, I realized that I missed technology. And an opportunity came along in September of 2005. I first became aware of it, to go to the Chicago Lighthouse and do what I'm doing now. So, let's see, what else can I tell you about me? In my spare time, you know, when I'm not working or doing things for ACB, I enjoy doing things with family. I enjoy computers, fishing, listening to country music, and just, you know, going out on the town and tipping a pint or two once in a while. So that's a little bit about me.
And now, the job that you do for the place that you do it deserves some description. So talk to us a little bit about how this job came about and what, in fact, the job is that you now do.
As I said, in September 2005, I received a call from the gentleman who's now my boss. He and I have been acquainted for a number of years. We actually met when I was working at Lucent. And he said to me, he said, Ray, you know, I've got this job that's available. I need to hire it. I'm under pressure from the powers that be here at the Chicago Lighthouse for people who are blind or visually impaired. We've got this grant to hire someone to run an adaptive technology help desk, but I can't find anybody. And so I said, okay, well, send me a job description, and I'll take a look at it. And as I mentioned earlier, I was missing technology. I, you know, did a little work at the Center for Independent Living. I mean, I was the only guy that knew a lot about computers, so, you know, naturally did a lot of troubleshooting work that way. So anyway, I took the job description, took a look at it, and it just fit. It just hit me. It said, wait a minute, this is what I've got to be doing. And so I called up Bill, my boss, and I said, you know, the perfect guy, Bill. And he said, oh, yeah, who? I said, me. And he said, well, we kind of talked about that. And so the fact I was going to make half again as much money was all right, too. So in November 2005, I started as Adaptive Technology Help Desk Technician for the Chicago Lighthouse for people who are blind or visually impaired. Boeing Corporation had given us a grant for 1 year salary and equipment, and basically what we spent quite a bit of time doing was figuring out how we're going to do all this, how are we going to set this up. And basically the ground rules were pretty simple. Help anybody who's blind or visually impaired or anybody who works with that population with any technology issues that they have. That was kind of how it started out. And so I started in November 2005, and I have done just about everything. We'll probably get more into depth on that, but just some of the things I've done. I've done everything from help people install antivirus software to help them figure out how to use JAWS, communicate with their matches on eHarmony.com, to help them access their credit card banking site so that they can be more independent in managing their financial affairs. And I think the greatest thing is I've worked with all kinds of people. I mean, people of wide variety of abilities. I mean, everyone from a person that barely knows how to turn the computer on to people that are pretty good at it. And, you know, it's been wonderful. We'll get more into depth, I'm sure, in the kind of clientele that I work with, but suffice it to say that it's been a lot of fun. It's paid pretty well, too, and it's been very rewarding to just, you know, be able to walk out at the end of the day and say, man, I really helped somebody. I really improved someone's life. Give you one example of a client that I really like working with. This gentleman who's deafblind, and he probably, sometimes he'll call me 4 or 5 times a week with something. the poor guy, no one really trained him how to use a computer. They set the computer in front of him, and the computer can be his world. And unfortunately, I don't think he was ever taught how to utilize it to its fullest capabilities. And so he's somebody that I really enjoy working with. So, it's been a real fun job, and it's a job that what I really like, the best thing about it is I take all the experience and all the frustrations and triumphs that I've had over the years figuring some of this stuff out and share that. It's just, that is exactly what I do, and I really, really love it.
Well, let's get a couple of things out on the table right away. Why don't you go ahead and give us the toll-free number that people can call if they want your help, tomorrow or the next day, so that everybody can write it down. And if you also have an email address where they can communicate with you in case the phone lines aren't working, perhaps you could give us that as well.
Actually, I'll go you a little better than that. Toll-free number. I'm the only one on our help desk. I'm the only technician. It's a solo effort, although I do get a lot of help from some dear colleagues in my Adaptive Technology Center. The number is 888-825-0080. Let me repeat that, 888-825-0080. And I am there from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, and that is Central Time U.S., 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Central Time U.S. And if you are not able to reach me during that time or just would like to email a question, you can do that. The email address is raycampbell@chicagolighthouse.org. Again, that's ray.campbell@chicagolighthouse.org. And the third way that you can communicate with me is I do have a account when I'm at work that I use on AIM, and that is TCL Help. TCL for the Chicago Lighthouse Help. And you can add that ID into your buddy list if you are an AIM user, and that's really a good service as well. So three ways you can communicate with me: telephone, email, and AOL Instant Messenger.
That's excellent. So now let's get a little bit more into it. Typically what happens is somebody calls you on the phone with a problem, and you basically stay on the phone with that person and provide him or her with instructions or assistance in terms of how to deal with it. Go into a little bit more detail about how a typical session works, and then if you would as well, what happens if you're not able to solve things with the first call?
Sure. Typically, someone is having a problem, or it might be just a question. Obviously, if they have a question, they call. I provide the best answer that I can, or direct them to some place that they can get a better answer if I do not know the answer. And then it's pretty well done. Those usually take maybe 5-10 minutes at the most. If it's a situation with a problem that might need to be resolved, like let me use an example of one that I did a lot last year, because anyone who has AT&T Yahoo or any version of it will know that last year there was a message that came down from them that said that everybody who used a client such as Outlook Express to get their email needed to start using Secure Socket Slayer or SSL connections. Got a number of calls from people, how do I do that? Well, what I would then do is get on the phone with the person. That person is sitting in front of their computer. Most of my calls, the vast majority, come from people who are screen reader users, JAWS or Window Eyes typically. I do get occasionally a Zoom text call, but that's very rare. Even some people who have some vision impairment, but they are able to use the built-in features on the computer to access it. So anyway, let's get back to our example here. So they call up and say, I need to set up for something called SSL. First of all, they ask me what it is, and then I'll tell them, you know, it's just a more secure way of transmitting your email. And then I walk them through the steps, and I'll say, let's say we're in Outlook Express. I'm going to say to that person, press Alt-T for the Tools menu, and I'm listening to their JAWS over the phone as we're doing this. I say Alt T for the tools menu. I say A to go to the email accounts, and then say you don't have to press enter. And then I take them through, you know, find the account, hit the properties button, and change the SSL settings to, for incoming it's 995 and outgoing it's 465. It's a quickie description. But what happens is that I have on my desk, I have a computer, I have two computers. I have one that I do all my company work, my record keeping, that sort of thing. But I have a second computer that has hard drives that can be swapped in and swapped out. So let's say on that machine I've got Vista running. And someone calls up and they've got Outlook Express and they need to do this SSL thing. Well, that's an XP thing. So I've got to put my XP home drive in, boot the machine up, and then once I'm done, I can actually be sitting there and doing the same keystrokes that they're doing. I'm listening to their screen reader talking, or if it's somebody that's not a screen reader, so I'm listening to them read the screen, and I'm giving them the keystroke for doing whatever it is that I need them to do to resolve their problem. Those calls can last anywhere from 20 minutes to, I've been on the phone with people three and a half hours trying to resolve various things. My favorite one that was one of my longest calls was a JAWS video intercept installation problem. The video intercept got screwed up and we had to go through all kinds of gyrations to get that fixed. So those calls can last a while. Okay, so what happens if I can't solve the problem? The first thing I'll do is, if it appears to be, first thing I'll try to do is say to them, well, this looks like a JAWS problem, or it looks like a problem with your computer. Let's conference in the appropriate tech support people, whether it's Freedom Scientific or Dell or whoever. And so we'll do that. And I'll be on the phone with them because, especially when you get to the mainstream companies, what happens is, they know nothing about speaking keyboard. They're talking mouse. And so what I can do with the person on the other end of the phone is to say, my client is to say that, okay, what they really mean is you what they're saying, click this. What you do is use these keystrokes to accomplish the same thing. And so that's one response if I can't resolve the problem. The other response will be that I will... let me do a little research. I'm on a number of email lists, BITS, ACB's, Special Interest Affiliate. I'm a member of that, so I use their list. I use VicAgel, which is another real popular list, and certainly the screen reader list, JAWS and Window Eyes and Braille Note and various things to get answers to my questions. So what I'll tell the individual is, I don't know the answer right now, but let me do some research, and I will get back to you. And my goal is to get back to people within a day. That's what I try and do. And then at the end of the call, I take, if they're a new caller that's never called before, I take their information, name, address, telephone number, email address. We need that just for record keeping. We don't use it for anything, any bad purposes or anything like that. We do it for record keeping. I take that information, put it in a database, and then I record a description of what the call was like, what we did, and if I was able to resolve the problem. So that's typically how a call would work on the help desk.
Now, what if the person lives in Outer Mongolia or Timbuktu? Can that person call in? Now, I know the toll-free number wouldn't work, but will you help people from other countries if they want to call in? And is there a particular number that they can call you at if they can't access the toll-free number?
Great question, Paul. First of all, I actually have helped people in other countries. I've helped a couple of people, one lady in China and one lady in South Africa, or one man in South Africa, I should say. The South African gentleman was an email request. He got to me by email, actually through a list, I think, and I was able to help him. The lady from China, I'm not sure how she did it, but she was able to get through on our 888 number. My problem with her is I can't call her back. Because they won't let me dial out to other countries. But if someone can reach me from another country, whatever means they can use, they can reach an American 800 number, 888 number, or we do have, obviously with every toll-free, there's always a direct line. And let me give that in case we have any international listeners who cannot use 888 numbers, and that would be 312-997-3651, that's U.S., and that will also get you to me, 312-997-3651. And again, just remember that I'm there 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. United States Central Time. It might be middle of the night where you are. The lady from China who called me used to call me in the middle of the night, but she wanted help with her computer and actually found us through Lighthouse International and was able to do that. So, yeah, I've actually taken some calls from other countries and requests for help from other countries. I shouldn't say calls because I do get email requests. I do get people to come in to visit me who are local, so I get my requests in a number of ways. But if someone's local to the Chicago area and we cannot resolve their problem over the telephone, those people are in the metropolitan area, then I can schedule a visit through one of our tech specialists to actually go out and see the person and actually resolve the problem on site. Or sometimes they may even let me out once in a while and actually go get to do some of those myself.
One of the technologies that has become pretty widely talked about in the mainstream computer repair area is actually being able to go online and, in effect, become a part of the computer, to actually use your computer and make change yourself. I didn't hear that you were doing that now. Have you guys given any thought to using that kind of remote access?
Paul, this is actually a very big hot-button issue with me in this sense. I commend the only product that we know of that would enable a blind person to do that, to remote into someone's computer and actually work on their computer, is Remote Incident Management. That's made by Ceratec Corporation. Very good product. I've seen it. I love it. The problem is, it is very expensive. And most of the calls that I handle, while it would certainly be a lot easier to do remote access, unfortunately, when you're working for a not-for-profit agency, it's a little bit hard to justify the expense that RIM costs. Again, in case anybody who uses it's listening, it's a great product. I have no qualms about it. But I have another problem with this whole thing. And my colleague sitting at the next desk can, through a Microsoft Remote Assistant, be invited in to remote into someone's computer and actually take control and do a number of things on the computer. Now, I guess the question I have is, why should the Lighthouse or anyone have to pay a fee for a blind tech support person to do something that a sighted person essentially gets to do for free? That's probably where I have the biggest issue. Now, I don't have a qualm with Ceratec charging for this. I think that, you know, obviously they're a company. They need to make money and make as much, you know, make a profit. And there's brain power and things that go into developing these things. My quandary is with my quarrel is with the screen reader vendors who haven't figured out how to make remote assistant, not the part where you actually send someone an invitation, but the part where you are the invitee, you are actually remoted into someone's computer, how to make that part accessible. And I don't know all the ins and outs of the technology and exactly how that works, but I really think that that is something that needs to be done. Because, again, why should we have to spend extra money to do something that the sighted tech support person essentially gets to do for free? And there are other products like Remote Assistant. I'm not picking on Microsoft. I mean, they're functioning a lot the same way. Log Me In Pro and Go to My PC and some of those things are essentially kind of the same way. Oh, I've heard that some of those things are partially accessible. We need to really work. I think that's one of the next frontiers that the screen reader manufacturers need to work on, is figuring out how to empower blind tech support professionals to be able to use the mainstream products that are out there, which will allow us to do what the sighted tech support people do.
From ACB Radio Mainstream, you are listening to Tuesday Topics. If you have comments about the show or a suggestion of a topic you would like to have discussed, send a message to TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. That's TuesdayTopics@acbradio.org. Once again, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
To start, press any key. Where's the any key? I see ESC, Catarl, and Pickup.
There doesn't seem to be any key.
Well, let's open it up and see if folks have some questions or issues that they'd like to raise with Mr. Ray Campbell, who is our guest this evening from the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind and perhaps visually impaired. So, who has a question for Ray? Jump in and remember to tell us who you are and where you're from.
Hello, Ray. This is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. It doesn't seem fair, this comment, I guess, that I think I agree with you that, like, System Access is doing a, from what I hear, is doing a good job. I'm not using the product, but Freedom Scientific or WindowEyes or GW Micro should be able to do the same thing, you know, train or show people how to do remote. I think I agree with that.
Thank you, Gary. And, you know, again, I don't know all the ins and outs of the technology and how the information is conveyed on the taking remote assistant as an example. The person being invited in, I don't know how the information is conveyed on that end, whether it could be intercepted and, you know, made accessible. I'm sure, you know, I don't know enough about that to know how that could happen. But I agree. I think that you know, again, as you say, you know, RIM is a great, great solution. I just, you know, there has to be a way. Again, when you're working in a not-for-profit agency, you have to be able to justify those expenses. And, you know, not-for-profits, good or bad, watch every dollar they spend. And, you know, it's just, at this point, we haven't been able to justify it, even though there are callers that I know it would be so much easier. The deafblind gentleman I was speaking of earlier, it is very hard to work with him on the telephone. I have to repeat myself two or three times a lot of times for him. But, I mean, that's what you do. But it would be so much easier if I could just remote into his machine and do what needs to be done. And of course, tell him what I'm doing as I'm doing it and let him listen to what's happening. And sometimes, frankly, when I'm doing my job, I feel like I've got a hand tied behind my back because I can't do that. But, you know, that's just something that we're going to have to work for. So thank you for that comment.
Another question or comment for Ray?
Hi, Ray. This is Jay Bader in Orlando, Florida. And let me be the third or fourth or of many of us that are here tonight to say you do a wonderful job. We can't commend you enough for all the efforts that you do there at the Chicago Lighthouse, and as I call it, the one-man wrecking crew. But maybe let's maybe do a 180 on things. You talked about the experiences that you've enjoyed regularly in doing your in doing the help desk there at Chicago Lighthouse, but let me ask this. What has been the strangest situation that you've dealt with, and have you been able to resolve it?
Jay, first of all, would you please call my boss and tell him all those wonderful things so that I can get a raise? I would really appreciate it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm not kidding. I like the raise, but you know, the wonderful comments are great, too. Oh, boy, strangest situation. I think the strangest situation, and I say it's strange because it was so simple to resolve. Lady had called me, and she was in a panic. She's like, I can't use my computer. I start typing. I walked away from it for a little bit, and I start typing, and nothing happens. And, oh, I can't do anything with it, and this and that. I said, just hit the down arrow key. She said, what? I said, just hit the down arrow key. And it said, Windows logon, then it said her username. The computer had logged her off, and she didn't realize it was going to do that. And so she was in this panic, really, for nothing. You know, those of us that are a little more experienced would have figured it out, but she just didn't know how to handle that situation. And it was weird. And it was just really, and she was so like, wow, that's all it was? And then, of course, you know, kind of felt stupid, and I said, don't feel stupid. I said, it's just, it happens to everybody. The other thing that I think one of the strangest situations is, talk about lack of abilities. There was a woman that called me once, and I don't know what the problem was, but I started giving her instructions. I said, okay, hit the Windows key to go to the start menu. She said, where's the Windows key? I'm like, oh, boy. I said, it's the key to the right of the left, the key next to the Alt key on the right side or left side. So she's like, oh, I never heard it called that before. And I think the third one that was kind of strange was, well, a guy called me up, and he's like, there's no sound coming out of my computer. My computer's not doing anything. So thank goodness, one of the things I want to do is to build a knowledge base on our Lighthouse website of articles about how to do various things that people can reference. And, well, so thank goodness I had something written down about keystrokes that one can use to unmute their computer. That is exactly what happened. He had muted his computer, and I went through the keystrokes that I have written down for how to fix that problem. And he was just like, I think that was the guy that said, come on down, I'll buy you supper, or something like that. So, you know, it's really funny. You get some people, I don't know if there's really any strange situations, but you get some people who call up, and they're just in a panic because they don't know. And so, but I got to tell you the funniest situation, as long as we're talking about situations. Kai calls me up, and he said, I send my fiancée emails, and she's not getting them. I said, ask her if your address is in the block senders list. And he said, I told him how to do that, so he asked her, and he came back. He said, yeah, it's in the block senders list. I said, before you two get married, you need to talk. He said, why? I said, because the only way that can happen is if she adds your address to the block senders list. You might want to talk about that before you buy any rings there. So there have been some strange situations. You get people that are just panicking, and you fix their problem, and then you get the funny situations like that. I think the eHarmony probably was one of my favorites, too. It's like, wow. In fact, we get in some interesting debates at the Lighthouse because I have to help people get on sites that the Lighthouse has blocked because they don't want people going on them. And so I get into some interesting debates with management there about unblocking certain websites so that I can get on them. Nothing pornographic or anything, but stuff that the powers that be have decided they don't want to let in.
Hey, Ray, I'm curious. Most of the issues you've been describing are software-based. How do you keep up on some of the hardware differences, things like note takers and embossers and scanners and the like, hardware issues?
I'm blessed to be in the greatest adaptive technology center in the country and maybe the world. We have almost everything there. Nobody can have everything, but we have just about everything there. Well, some of that, Brian, was my personal experience. I've used a Braille note for years, for example. I'm very good with Duxbury and embossers and figuring out different things about embossers. And then when I went to the Lighthouse, I took the time to learn the PacMate and learn what it could do. In fact, I did a little training on the PacMate. I just basically try and, in my spare time at work, which I do have a little bit of, not much, but I do have a little bit, try to pick up pieces of equipment that we have, especially things that are geared more to the totally blind, and work with them a little bit, play with them, learn how they tick, that kind of thing. My latest venture right now that I'm studying or trying to find time to study, and I think I'm going to really work on it after convention, go hell-bent to it, is the Mac. The Mac is a whole different, if you are a Windows PC user, the Mac is a whole different beast. It's a great beast. I think it's got some great potential, but it's very different keystrokes and things that you have to use. And so I'm trying to study that and to learn as much as I can about that. I have a lot of access, a lot of material on the web. I do a lot of, correspondence through email lists to learn about different things. And I also do, when I can, download reference manuals so that I can go in and help people with different things. Certainly if somebody calls me up and has a problem with their video card or something, that's not something that I would feel comfortable solving over the telephone with somebody. I asked them to probably get a hold of somebody that can, like a Geek Squad or somebody that can come out and actually help them with it. And in that, but no, I just try to go and pick up pieces of equipment. Like I said, I'm blessed to be in the best adaptive technology center, and I think, and it's really, really terrific, and that helps a great deal. And I mentioned also earlier the money that we got for equipment. That was exactly what we used a lot of that for, is to buy equipment that we would need and to buy as much of it as we could. Now, of course, things keep changing, and we have to keep adding things. And the other thing I've been playing around with lately is the Braille Plus Mobile Manager. Neat little device. I think it's got some great potential. So yeah, I just try to pick up what we have in the center and work with it as much as I possibly can. Sometimes I bring it home with me and work with the small stuff. So that's how I do it.
Well, listeners would probably shoot me if I didn't ask you this next question, so I'm going to ask it. Is eHarmony accessible? And if it is, do you have any tips or tricks that you would recommend that eHarmony potential users might try before they get onto this website? Oh, and by the way, you might want to, just in case there are some folks who don't know, tell folks what eHarmony is.
Okay. You know, it's been a couple of years since I did the eHarmony thing, and I don't... At that time, it was a site that was partially accessible, I would say. You had to find the appropriate buttons to click on or to hit enter on or spacebar on to do various things, like to send back when you got a match, you had to send back a response to that person. It wasn't real accessible. It wasn't real easy. So, unfortunately, it's been a couple of years, so I don't have any notes in front of me, and I don't remember what I did. But now, what eHarmony is, and by the way, being a married man, that's the only reason I can go on eHarmony.com, is I'm doing it for work. eHarmony.com is it's a internet online dating type site. You can, if you're looking for somebody to potentially build a relationship with, you can go on there. You can set up a personal profile. They use something called dimensions of compatibility to determine who you match out with. And you put in your personal profile and all the information about you and, what you look like and your interests and hobbies and all the things that potential dates would be interested in. And then you see if you get any, and you can check back and see if you get any matches, and you can communicate back and forth with people that you match up with. I think eventually you can exchange email addresses and phone numbers as you see fit and that kind of stuff. But that's what it is, an online internet dating site is what it is. And I had to go on that site and help somebody try to access it. So that was really before the White House really got serious about blocking stuff. So it was a little easier then, but I had to make sure my boss knew, hey, this is why I'm on eHarmony.com. I'm actually helping somebody. I'm not doing anything I shouldn't. So that was kind of interesting. But unfortunately, I can't remember any good tips or tricks for that. And they probably changed their site anyway, so I'm unfortunately going to guess that they are probably less accessible, but I could be totally wrong because I don't go up there.
Okay, the person who called Ray Campbell 2 years ago, you need to get back in touch with him and let him know if you're married. Is there another question for Ray?
Yes, this is Michelle Armington calling from Tallahassee, Florida. Ray, I would like to know, have you found a workaround or any kind of solution for when you go on an internet site and they ask you for a visual code, for you to repeat a code that is flashed across the screen, and then the user has to repeat that code on the keyboard, and of course us visually impaired folks can't see it, and sometimes it verbally doesn't give it back. Now, I think Google has recently added that feature that they will verbally spell it out, but not everything has that, and there are several sites that have, unfortunately, that problem. And then also a follow-up question in regard to that, and I'll go ahead and say it. If you are taking off of your system a particular software package, and it requires a visual code to take it off of the program, I don't know if we're allowed to mention particular programs, but Norton Antivirus, if you're taking it off, sorry, I just used it. If you're trying to take it off of your system and it requires another visual code to take it off, then again, you're kind of limited because it doesn't verbally give you that code. Have you found a workaround for any of these two issues? Thank you.
Marcella, I have to say, take your first question first. Unless a site has the audio, and that's not completely accessible, if you're somebody who's deafblind, you can't hear that. And even if you have good hearing, you can't hear some of those things. There is no workaround. And the reason for that is those characters are not real letters. They're graphic representations of letters and numbers, and no screen reader is going to be able to read those. And the reason for that is that these things are put up on sites so that, you know, people that want to send out spam emails don't sign up for email accounts to do that, is one of the big reasons. There are other sites that have them too. Robots buying large numbers of tickets on a site like tickets.com, for example. Unless the audio is available, there is no other workaround for that at this time. I do know that there are some studies going on. I forget who's doing it. I just saw something a week or so ago about this, that there is some work going on in this area to try and figure out how to do that. There's also a site called CAPTCHAKILLER.com. I've not tried it myself. I don't know how well it works, so I don't know much about that particular site, but I have heard of that, CAPTCHAKILLER.com. So maybe somebody on here can jump in if they've used it. That's your first question. There is no other workaround other than the audio that they have, which is garbled for a reason. It's garbled because they don't want voice recognition programs to pick it up and basically defeat CAPTCHA. That'll get just deal with the spammers as far as I'm concerned. The second question, I've never seen a situation where you have, when taking a software package off of your computer, you have to have a visual code like a CAPTCHA to put in. In fact, I just took, now, the last time I took Norton off of my system was about a year ago, and I did not have to do something like that. I do know that with Norton, sometimes what will happen is that you go through the add remove programs process under control panel, and not everything gets removed, and so you have to go online to the Symantec.com website and access Norton removal tools, and they supposedly download some things and remove anything that didn't get removed in the add remove programs process. So I can't really answer your second question on a visual code to remove a piece of software. I've not seen that kind of thing, but I do know that when you install software, you do have to use product keys, and those are found on the packaging. And if you have sighted assistance, you can obviously have a person read it to you. You can also try scanning it with a OCR package and scanner if you have that. But I've never seen the visual code to take a package off. That's a new one to me. And I don't know of a workaround that would let you do that. Man, they're getting desperate. They're trying to block us from taking software off our machines. That's interesting.
Just a quick comment for folks. 2 to 3 weeks ago, Main Menu, a sister program on ACB Radio, did a two-hour presentation on CAPTCHAs and what the current state of the game is. So if you are someone who's having CAPTCHA issues, you might want to check out their archives and take a listen to that program, because it does talk about a number of workarounds that might potentially be doable. Ray, How do you see your job developing as time goes on? Is the demand increasing on a regular basis so that it's becoming difficult for one person to handle all the calls? Is the Chicago Lighthouse going to need to at least look at adding some more staff?
The demand is increasing so far. Our goal is 1,000 calls a year. I don't know where they did the projections, but they figure that one person can handle 1,000 calls a year. That's 83.3 or something per month, which works out to about 20 calls a week. That's not bad. A person can handle that and not go too crazy. I will tell you personally, I see the help desk job evolving into more of a providing perhaps a little bit more training, providing some references and some resources that people can access to get help when the help desk person's not there. Maybe expanding hours and then looking at, therefore, hiring some staff. I know my bosses even talked about the idea of hiring on some staff to work remotely to provide, be reachable. That would, you call into the same number, but you'd get somebody, and that person might be sitting, say, in Tallahassee, Florida, or someplace like that, not to pick on Florida. But so I see it expanding. I see the job continuing to expand and the demand continuing to increase because I still get calls from people that will say, well, gee, we didn't know you were out there. And we do try to do at least 3 or 4 rounds of publicity each year to various sources so that mainstream media and blindness-specific media to alert folks. I think it's one of these things that, you hear about a service and you don't need it right away, so you put it aside. And then when you do need it, you forget about it. And you're like, oh, geez, what do I do? I see the service continuing to evolve. I see potentially us bringing on more staff and maybe companies outsourcing their tech support to us. Companies that don't want to have their own staff outsourcing their tech support to us. I know personally, for me, I would like to expand my role, and I'm starting to do just that, into actually providing some more training, more hands-on training with people. And I'm working to eventually get myself more out into the field and doing more direct service work with people on job sites, setting up technology, providing some training, that kind of thing. I think there are a number of models that kind of go along with the whole Lighthouse, especially our Adaptive Technology Center and some of the things that I see developing down the road there. Being able to contract with folks to actually go out and do in-depth training. I'd like to, for the help desk, I'd like to be able to eventually gather a reference database or library of places around the country that if I can't solve a problem, I can say, what state are you in? The person can tell me, and they can say, or whoever's running the help desk, and they can say, oh, you have this place in your state that you may contact. Here's their number, or maybe even work out a way that we can actually transfer them right to them. And, the call comes through the Lighthouse. It gets some sort of, from the Chicago Lighthouse help desk, gets some sort of priority, and then the person would get service and, maybe get some on-site service that they might need. I think there's a lot of directions the help desk could go, from being just the telephone, typical tech support line, using more online support. I'd like to do online chat where people can click on a link that, and can buzz me, and we can do it that way. Definitely some expanded hours, and of course then they're going to have to hire more people. So there's a number of possibilities that the help desk can go, and I'll be honest with all of you here, I certainly don't expect to or want to be doing it forever. So, I hope that, one of the things that I want to start working on, not that I'm planning to leave anytime soon, but is to really put together what the job description for this job needs to be. I mean, the Lighthouse had one when I was hired, but it was something they kind of thought what it needed to be. I really think that, and I want to talk with my boss about this, that we need to start thinking about putting something together as to, okay, we've got the experience now. What does the job description really entail, and what are the qualifications really need to be? It's a long way to answer your question, Paul, but there are a number of directions that the help desk can go, and you know, we'll just have to kind of wait and see what happens. It's moving probably as fast as technology.
What do you see yourself as in competition with those who provide support for products? Or do you see yourself as complementing their service? How do you see yourself as fitting into that constellation?
I'll answer that question very simply this way, Paul. Freedom Scientific has referred, in the 2.5 years I've been doing this, about 22 people to us. So I see what I do as a complement. You know, you call up Freedom Scientific, they're going to help you with your JAWS or MAGIC or PacMate problem. But they're not going to help you with your Outlook Express problem, if that's what it turns out to be. You call up GW Micro, they're going to help you with your Braille Sense or your Window Eyes or your Portable Sense View. They're not going to help you with accessing a website or, you know, installing a piece of antivirus software. There's really, I see myself as a complement. I see what we do as a complement to the other tech support folks that are out there. I see myself as a complement also to people that provide training. You can provide training to people, and after the trainer leaves, you know, other problems and issues are going to crop up. People now have a resource that they can give people, or a place that they can tell people, hey, call this number. I will tell you, one of the things that happens a lot to me is Hadley, on their help desk, has put our phone number on their voicemail, so that when people call in and they get the voicemail system, the idea is if you have a general computer problem, not specific to Hadley, you call this number. I get calls for Hadley software because our number's there. So I see myself kind of as picking up after where others won't tread in the blindness world. Being able to provide a level of support to people that the mainstream companies like your Dells and your Microsofts just can't provide, frankly.
Do you have some folks who call in too regularly, who kind of abuse the service by not making any effort to learn themselves, but by simply calling and asking you every single question? And if that's the case, how do you deal with the person who essentially won't leave you alone and doesn't appear willing or interested in going out and making the effort to learn? Or does that not concern you?
I'd say the overall answer to that question is, you know what, I try to deal with those folks. I have a few of those people. The people that, you know, my whole philosophy when I leave somebody is I want them to have learned how to do certain things so that if they've come across the same or similar problem the next time, they'll kind of have an idea how to do it. That doesn't always happen, and people are people, and people are different, and come in all shapes and sizes. So I do have some regular ones. I try to steer them towards things that I think would help them. You know, you tend to develop a rapport with people like that, and you become almost friends with them. And that can be a little bit of a problem if you are in customer service, because sometimes you say something. I've got pretty good sense of humor, and so I say something that I think is kind of funny, and it might offend them. But what I try to do is steer them towards resources that I think can help them. For example, I try to talk to them about things like Hadley's computer courses that they have, like Internet Beyond the Basics and things of that nature that I think would help somebody. You know, I sometimes will come out and ask them, especially if it's somebody, you know, has anybody ever sat down and trained you how to use, you know, really given you some training? And they say no. A lot of times, no. And so I try to steer them to things like Hadley. And invariably what I get sometimes, oh, you don't want to help me anymore. Well, you know, it's not that I don't, and I try to tell them, it's not that I don't want to help you, it's that I want you to learn, you know, and I even say, what are you going to do the day I'm not here? You know, that could happen. I try to be as gentle with them as I can and try to direct them towards things, but ultimately in the end, what I've been told is that people call you, you've got to help them, and, you know, do the best you can to try and assist them, regardless who they are. I am fortunate that in the time I've done this, I've only had two individuals complain about me. So out of providing assistance, providing roughly roughly 1,700-1,800 requests for help. I've only had two individuals complain about me, and one of those people is a very regular caller, and I must have caught me on a bad day or something. But you have difficult clients like that, and I have clients that are people that call in regularly, and if I don't call them back right away, they're calling my boss, saying, well, he's not calling me back. He hasn't called me back, and I've been waiting for him to call. And, my management is pretty good. I mean, they realize that some of that is just that people are being difficult clients and stuff like that. So I just try to meet people where they're at and try to assist them. I mean, when somebody's abusing the system, so you kind of sometimes dread calling them back because, like, you're thinking to yourself, what dumb question are they going to ask this time? And you can't think like that when you're doing this kind of work because everybody is at a different level. So it's really hard. That's a long way of answering your question, but yeah, we do have people like that, and yeah, it's hard. I try to steer them to resources, but ultimately, if they want to call me for help, I've got to help them.
Ray, could you go through the three ways that people can get hold of you for us once more? Ray Campbell is the help desk at the Chicago Lighthouse for the Blind, and he can be reached by telephone, by email, and by AOL Instant Messenger. Give us those numbers once more, if you would, Ray.
Be happy to, and then I will leave you and go back to packing up my kitchen. The telephone number, good 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. United States Central Time, is 888-825-0080. If you cannot access the United States toll-free number, you can call our direct number, 312-997-3651. Otherwise, you can send me an email to ask any questions that you have. That email address is ray.campbell@chicagolighthouse.org. Again, that's ray.campbell@chicagolighthouse.org. And finally, AOL Instant Messenger users, you can add this to your buddy list and use it as needed. TCL help. TCLHELP. That is all lowercase. And you can contact me via AOL Instant Messenger as well with that ID. So those are the three ways that you can get in touch with me. And I would like to say that I welcome anyone's calls or emails or instant messages. I'll do my best to assist you. I will, if I can't answer your question, I'm not going to leave you hanging. I'm going to try to either get on the line with somebody who can answer it for you or refer you to some place where you can get an answer or find the answer for you and call you back. Those are the ways you can get in touch with me.
Thank you very much, Ray, for all of your answers to our questions tonight and for the job that you do. I think you certainly made a huge difference in the lives of an awful lot of people who have otherwise really no easy recourse to getting answers to questions. And you've certainly created a climate where people actually feel comfortable asking questions that may even seem to some not to be very bright ones. We very much appreciate your being with us this evening on Tuesday Topics. We thank you very much for your time and for your effort. I'd like to thank listeners for tuning in as well. Remember, our email is tuesdaytopics@acbradio.org. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think of our program. Give us suggestions for future ones. We always welcome those. And remember, the only truly dumb question is the one that isn't asked. Good night.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday at 1 hour Universal. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. That's ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each program begins, those who are online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room software. An announcement about the show, including information about the topic and the guest speaker, will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends List. So we hope you will come and join us each week on Tuesday, when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. will look for you in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. Tuesday Topics is a production of ACB Radio Mainstream.